our church remains generously decorated with poinsettias today. It is an iron rule of parish life. The Easter lilies die way too quickly, but the poinsettias you generally have to kill off with your own hand after a while. I think of that this morning because the poinsettias remind us of Christmas, and likewise the first reading of the Mass today very much takes us back to the Christmas season. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Upon those who dwelt in the land of gloom, a light has shone. If we had continued reading just a little farther from the prophet Isaiah, we would have got to the famous part where it says, "For a child is given to us, a son is born to us. Upon his shoulder dominion rests. He shall be called Wonder Counselor, God, Hero, Father forever, Prince of Peace." We're still seeing and hearing the echoes of Christmas in the life of the church. And indeed, the very last day for that, at least in theory, I'm not sure the poinsettias will be dead by then, but at least in theory, the last day for that is a week from today, when February 2nd falls on a Sunday. We'll celebrate the Feast of the Presentation of the Lord. That's the 40th day after Christmas and the very end of our thinking about Christmas in the liturgical life of the church. But we're not in the Christmas season anymore. It's ordinary time. And the gospel today, while it quotes that prophecy from Isaiah, is very appropriate to these early weeks of ordinary time, because it tells us about the beginning of Jesus' public life that we recall during this season of the year. As I was looking at the gospel in preparation for the homily today, it occurred to me that there is a lot of geography in today's gospel. You know, very often the gospel reading for a Sunday begins kind of abruptly with the Lord doing what he is going to do, performing a miracle or giving some teaching to his disciples. But today, at the beginning of the Lord's public life, we get a little geographical framework for what the Lord did during those 3 years. We're told at the beginning of the gospel, Jesus heard that John had been arrested. That, of course, would be John the Baptist. We're quite confident that John the Baptist was baptizing at the Jordan River, not far from Jerusalem, because people from Jerusalem were coming out to be baptized by him. And in the Holy Land, there are a couple of sites on the Jordan River, down by Jerusalem, that are identified as the places where John likely was baptizing. If you can picture in your mind's eye a little map of the Holy Land of Israel, you can put near the top a little body of water, the Sea of Galilee, and then coming out from it, the River Jordan, in more or less a straight line going south, then terminating in a bigger body of water, the Dead Sea. So John the Baptist was baptizing down toward the mouth of the Jordan River, and that is where Jerusalem would be. I'm trying to think if you're looking at my hands from this side, which way is east and which way is west. It would be, well, it's west of the Jordan anyway, whichever side that should be on for you. So that's where Jesus was baptized. But when he heard that John was arrested, he withdrew from there. That land near Jerusalem was called Judea. That was kind of the Jewish heartland. That's where the Jewish population was the densest. It's also where the authorities were located. Of course, it was King Herod who had had John arrested. It's also where the Sanhedrin, the chief priests were. So, you know, I think we could think a little bit about the human motivations of Jesus and his human nature, that that was maybe not the the best place to be. You could run afoul of the authorities in that kind of Jewish heartland. So the Lord withdrew from there and went to Galilee. Now, remember, the Sea of Galilee is this little body of water up north. That's where Galilee is. Called in the prophecy we heard in the first reading, which is quoted in the gospel, Galilee of the Gentiles. It was part of the promised land. You know, Jacob, one of the great patriarchs, the son of Isaac, he had 12 sons, and the promised land was parceled out to the tribes that those different sons founded. So Zebulun and Naphtali, who are mentioned in the gospel today and in the prophecy, they were two of the sons of Jacob. They got the northern part of the promised land. That was what was called Galilee. So it was part of the promised land, but it was never as thoroughly Judaized as Judea. So some of the old Canaanite pagans always remained there. It was a kind of a lively trade route, so there were lots of different kinds of people coming through. The Romans had a presence there in Capernaum. So it was a much more diverse, mixed population. It wasn't the Jewish heartland. It was a place where there were lots of different religious influences. So Jesus left Judea. He went up there to Galilee, where he would really spend his whole public life. To get an idea of the scale, well, that was a difference of less than 100 miles. And Galilee itself would be an area like on the scale of Dane County, more or less. Not a very big place. But all the towns that we hear about, for the most part, in the public life of Jesus, are all in that little part of the world in Galilee. That's where Jesus had grown up, in Nazareth. Nazareth was in Galilee. But we're told in the gospel today, he left Nazareth and went to live in Capernaum by the sea. Now, our knowledge of this isn't perfect from biblical times, but it's pretty well established that Nazareth in the time of Jesus would have been a little village of a few hundred people, not more than 400. Nothing ever really happened in Nazareth. And one of the future apostles, when he's told that Jesus is from Nazareth, says, "Can any good come from Nazareth?" Not because Nazareth had such a bad reputation, because it had such a lack of reputation. So Jesus left Nazareth. He didn't go back to the little town where he grew up, where he was known, where he undoubtedly knew everyone. He said famously, "No prophet is without honor except in his own town." He went to Capernaum, which was on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, a bigger town, like maybe 1,500 people in Jesus' day. There was a Roman presence there. That's where the Roman centurion came to ask him for a favor. Later in his, after his resurrection, really, in appearance to St. Peter, Jesus says to him, "Put out into deep water and lower your nets for a catch." That's kind of what Jesus was doing in moving from Nazareth to Capernaum. Again, if we think about Jesus, the Lord, in his human nature, if we think only about the Lord's divine nature, we might think that everything was obvious to him and everything was easy for him. But if we think about the Lord's human nature, we say, to leave Nazareth, where you have been a carpenter, where you have lived very quietly, go to the town five times the size, and to begin publicly teaching. That was really putting out into the deep water for Jesus. But through that, the words of the prophet Isaiah were fulfilled. Galilee of the Gentiles, that rather pagan place, far from the temple, far from the sacrifices of the old law down in Jerusalem. That was the place where the light of the gospel came. Thinking about that geography and that story, we might well be reminded again of our new Holy Father, Pope Francis, and his invitation, his challenge to all in the church to go out to the margins, to give witness to those who are not so close to God at the moment, to those who might be dwelling in a land overshadowed by death, as the prophet Isaiah said. This gospel in which we hear about the beginning of the Lord's public life, it's a beautiful gospel for the new evangelization. Going into that land, into that city, that it's very much a mixed bag in which there is a great diversity of people, different kinds of religious currents and, you know, non-religious currents, where Jesus, the light who had come into the world, first appeared and taught during his public life. This gospel is a challenge for us to go and do likewise. Today, the church in our country begins a celebration in honor of our Catholic schools, Catholic Schools Week, it's called. It's a much bigger deal in parishes that have their own parochial schools, as we no longer do downtown here. But certainly our Catholic schools are a great treasure of the church. You know, I myself am a product of our schools, and I believe in them very strongly. But just very recently, I was talking to a woman whose older children are in a public high school. And she had a very interesting story, very encouraging story to tell about one of her daughters. She said that this daughter has found that a number of her classmates and friends are quite intrigued by her because she is generally content and appears, by and large, happy. This is an unusual thing in their experience. Apparently, they're not so content. They're not so happy. They don't see a lot of that among their peers. But of course, you know, this young woman is a person of faith. She's strong in her Catholic faith. And her peers see that there is something there that they don't quite have. So this mother went on to tell me that some of her daughter's friends have expressed an interest in coming to church with her. It's always harder to, you know, follow through on those good intentions. We all have that experience. But that is an effect that the disciple of the Lord can have in that world in which there is a lot of darkness. That's a beautiful story. It's a very encouraging story. I think, certainly for myself and for many of us, it's hard to imagine what it would be like to live with no knowledge of God or no idea of what goes on behind the doors of those churches. I mean, for most of us, that's been such an integral part of our experience from the beginning. We can hardly imagine what it would be like not to have that. But that is a common experience of our time. That's the world that's dwelling in darkness and in the shadow of death, in which the Lord calls us, invites us, challenges us to bear his light, to be witnesses to that light. So we offer the Eucharist today. We remember with gratitude and affection the beginning of our Lord's public life. in which his light became visible in the world, and that little part of the world called Galilee. We ask the Lord that he might live in us and reign in our hearts, that we might likewise bear his light to the world in which we live.